This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
You're working work for years and years, you're always on the go. You never take a minute off, too busy making dough. Someday you say you'll have your fun when you're a millionaire. Imagine all the fun you'll have in your old rocking chair.
Enjoy yourself. Still in the pink, the years go by as quickly as a wink. Enjoy yourself, it's later than you think.
What I have to tell is a very grim story indeed.
In the summer of 2023, over a billion people are suffering through extreme heat. Thousands of heat records are falling around the world. For 36 straight days, Americans in the Southwest and Deep South are just living inside when they can, with no relief during hot, humid nights. The whole of North Africa is burning with searing heat, including wildfires in Algeria, claiming dozens of lives. The Middle East is sizzling. Turkey just set a new all-time high. The Caucasus right up into Russia are cooking. The heat in Iran is not just record-setting, but stunning. I've seen reports in Iran of humidex readings, that's the heat plus humidity, as high as 158 degrees Fahrenheit, 70 degrees C. North India is far too hot, and so are parts of China. People are roasting. The combinations of heat and humidity in Japan are just jaw-dropping bad. It's a belt of non-stop record heat around the Northern Hemisphere. I feel sorry for people living there, especially outdoor workers, the poor, and the homeless. It's heartless heat. In fact, the amount of heat in 2023 has shocked even climate scientists. Reputable scientists are asking, could this all be just climate change and El Nino? There's a lot of discussion, including water vapor from the Tungan volcano and a reduction in ship pollution. Other scientists say after being held back by the cooling of La Nina for 3 years, this is the real impact of the ever-increasing greenhouse gases we've been tossing into the atmosphere. Add the big geological level changes of the glaciers of Greenland and Antarctica, crazy low sea ice around the South Pole, and global marine heat waves. It's easy to panic. Is it too late? Guests on this show have been asking that question for a long time. It is time for my classic 2009 radio show, Enjoy Yourself. It's later than you think. A few things have changed since this blast from the past. Most things are worse than we thought possible for the 2020s. You be the judge.
But it does require that we have a moratorium on any new coal-fired power plants. And over the next 25 to 30 years, we're going to have to phase out those that exist.
What if you knew that every time you flip on your light switch, a mountaintop in West Virginia just blows up?
Enjoy yourself, it's later than you think.
Alex is about to die. And enter the year 2009.
Is it already too late to stop rampant climate change? An emailed blog posting asks, do we just enjoy the time we have left? Scientist James Lovelock thinks so. He wanted the subtitle of his new book, Vanishing Gaia, changed from Final Warning to Enjoy It While You Can. He tells famous interviewer David Frost in April 2009.
Enjoy it while you can.
Enjoy it while you can. And how old are you now?
I'll be 90 in July.
Is it really that serious? We'll hear top American and British administrators say that it is. But I want to contrast the response by two scientists, James Lovelock, who at age 90 plans to blast out into space, and NASA's James Hansen, the first world-class climate scientist to put himself up for arrest, to stop mountaintop coal mining in West Virginia. Doubting coal barons, the black secret of George Soros, U.S. climate dodgers in Canada, from outer space to the deepest pit, enjoy yourself. This is Radio EcoShock. That's The Specials, in a UK appearance with their remake of the 1949 hit you heard at the beginning of this program, Enjoy Yourself, It's Later Than You Think, by Canadian Guy Lombardo and his band. On June 18th, Hillary S. challenged her Care to Global Warming blog readers.
What I want to know is this. Can we as individuals actually do enough to stop it in time? Or should we just do what little we can and enjoy the time we have left?
That brought a blistering response from the Deep Green author, Derek Jensen.
This is why I hate so much of the so-called environmental movement. We're talking about life on this planet, and people move directly from consumer choices to giving up.
I'm sorry Derek is driven to hate others who are struggling to understand this new reality. He's already concluded that industrial civilization is not, and never can be, sustainable. In fact, he thinks civilization will and should fail.
A few years ago, I began to feel pretty apocalyptic, but I hesitated to use that word, in part because of those cartoons I've seen of crazy penitents carrying the end is near signs, and in part because of the power of the word itself. Apocalypse. I didn't want to use it lightly. And then a friend and fellow activist said to me, "So Derek, what's it going to take for you to finally use that word? Will it take the death of runs of salmon so large that people are afraid to put their boats in the water for fear they'd capsize? So large that horses were afraid to get in the water? So large that you would hear them long before you would see them? Or maybe it'll take the death of flocks of passenger pigeons so large they darkened the sky for days at a time? So large that they were as loud as thunder, moving 60 miles an hour? Maybe it'll take the death of flocks of Eskimo curlews just as large. Maybe it'll take the turning of the sea off San Diego into a dead zone. Maybe it'll take putting dioxin in every mother's breast milk. Maybe it'll take 90% of the large fish in the oceans being gone. You know, what's it going to take, Derek? What's a threshold? Give me a threshold at which you're finally going to use that word." I asked people all over the country, "Do you believe that our culture is going to undergo a voluntary transformation to a sane and sustainable way of living?" And the answer is the same as at least a couple people in the front row with chuckles. Oftentimes people laugh out loud. It's absurd. And the next question is, if you don't believe that the culture is going to go undergo a voluntary transformation to a sane and sustainable way of living, what does that mean for your strategy and for your tactics? And the answer is we don't know. And one of the reasons we don't know is because we don't talk about it. And one of the reasons we don't talk about it is because we're also busy pretending that we have hope.
Derek Jensen, March 2006. In my opinion, Jensen's anger won't help the world either. He advocates blowing up dams but never gets arrested himself. I've recorded Derek bragging about his personal AK-47 attack rifle and his friends knowledgeable about explosives, but he has no coherent way forward as far as I can see other than all fall down. For me, Derek Jensen is a little like the German philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche. What we need is to read it and go through the fire of his nihilism in order to realize what we really do think. I might recommend Jensen's new book, Endgame 3, if it wasn't 500 pages long. The Care 2 readers at care2.com are mostly women, it seems. Some are just beginning their recognition about the deep problems of consumer society. Others are more stimulated by the plight of animals. They are part of the tree, and just so you know, the world's best scientists are also debating whether there is anything we can do to stop climate change. Last week on Radio EcoShock, we ran clips from the White House release of the new report, Global Climate Change Impacts on the United States. If you missed it, please download that free MP3 file from our program archive for June 19, 2009. How serious is it? Barack Obama appointed John Holdren as assistant to the President for Science and Technology and director of the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy. He's Obama's top science advisor. As part of the U.S. climate impacts release, Holdren appeared on the weekly environmental program Living on Earth. Here's a clip from the June 19th interview with John Holdren.
From the Jennifer and Ted Stanley studios in Somerville, Massachusetts, this is Living on Earth. I'm Steve Curwood.
Well, first of all, I would say we're already noticing it. People are noticing changes in the growing seasons. They're noticing the increased frequency of wildfires, the increased frequency of floods in the United States. So the place to start is that we really are already experiencing adverse effects of climate change. What we will see if climate change continues unabated is all of these kinds of symptoms that I've described will become more severe. I would say that people in the West are likely to notice increasing difficulties with water shortages. In the longer run, one of the most noticeable effects is likely to be the increase in sea level that comes from a warming world and that we're already experiencing at a rate that is about twice the rate of sea level rise in the 20th century. You would have in some parts of the country where there might be 10 or 20 days a year over 100 degrees Fahrenheit now. You would in the future, with these large increases in average temperature, you might have 100 or 150 days a year that exceed what you might call the threshold of very, very hot, that would have large impacts on agriculture.
Impacts on agriculture? What do you mean?
I mean the productivity of food crops would go down. You wouldn't be able to grow as much corn or wheat on an acre of land as you can grow today because the heat stress on the plants would be damaging their capacity to grow and bear grain.
Some people say, look, we're on this path. Climate change is inevitable. We're in it now. It's simply going to get worse. And the sense comes up that it may just be too late to do anything. How accurate is that?
I absolutely disagree that it's too late to do anything. What the science shows above all is that the more climate change we get, the more difficult it's going to be to cope with it. And we have opportunities by acting now and in the future to drastically reduce the amount of climate change we're going to be experiencing. I mean, this is a very simple proposition. More is worse, less is better, and we have the opportunity by taking action to make it less. That's what we ought to be doing.
The Gulf Coast all the way to Minnesota, we're talking about oppressive conditions. These are high temperatures. Little Rock, 100. Chicago, 94. Detroit, 93. Tampa, 94. Atlanta, 93. But when you factor in the heat and humidity, it feels like it's actually anywhere from 5 to 10 degrees above. It'll feel like 100 in Tampa, 106 in New Orleans, Indianapolis, 97. Tulsa, 109.
But we've been having extremely hot weather for about the last week and a half. The high today is expected to be 98 or higher. The record high for today is only 94 degrees. So we're probably going to break it today. We broke a record here in Miami yesterday. Saturday, we tied the record. And it's like that all over the South. I mean, we're going to see 100 degree weather likely today in Montgomery, Memphis. Parts of Kansas are feeling it. In Tallahassee, Florida's capital, they're expecting a high today of 102 degrees, and they've had 100 or higher degree temperatures for the last 6 days in a row. Normally, they only have 200 or higher days per year.
Reporting from MSNBC News, June 23, 2009.
Do we still get to avoid more warming here?
There is nothing that we can do to stop a climate change in its tracks. There's a tremendous amount of momentum built into the climate system. We are not yet experiencing the full consequences of the heat-trapping gases we've already added to the atmosphere because of time lags in the way the global climate system responds. So we will see some continuing increase in global surface temperature and regional increases in surface temperatures no matter what we do. But we have a big opportunity to minimize the amount of change we will experience. The aim that most scientists who study this matter have agreed is one that is still within reach and is highly desirable would be to stabilize the concentration of heat-trapping gases in the atmosphere at a level that would limit the global average surface temperature increase to about 3.5 degrees Fahrenheit above the pre-industrial level. Now, if we do everything right, I think we could achieve that.
Do you really believe that the United States will act to hold global warming within 2 degrees centigrade? Or that China and India will partake in that? Look, the Waxman-Markey bill is floundering. The Senate has just wandered it down terribly. Obama shows no sense of moving against coal. I don't believe it's going to happen. I'm sorry, I've got to go with Derek Jensen on this one. We're heading for big climate change.
It'll soon be over for you. The rest of us, the walking wounded, must go on living for a while.
What are you talking about? What are you talking about?
You haven't heard?
Heard what?
The radio.
We can hear similar warnings all over the world, from the United Nations on down. Here's a recent release from the British Environment Agency with its head, Lord Chris Smith.
Climate change is undoubtedly happening already. We know that even if we stop emitting all greenhouse gases tomorrow, climate change will carry on happening for quite a while yet. But we can either make it better or we can make it worse. And if we carry on as we are at the moment, carbon dioxide emissions increasing by 3% a year globally, if we carry on like that, then we're not just going to face difficulties, we're going to face catastrophe as a planet. That we need desperately to try and avoid. One of the things that I feel very strongly is we can fix this. We can deal with it. We can change the way as a society that we work. And unless we do that, we're going to face serious problems.
The top science advisor to Angela Merkel, Chancellor of Germany, is Hans-Joachim Schellenhuber. He's with the Potsdam Institute. One of his most famous papers is simply titled, Global Warming, Stop Worrying, Start Panicking. I could spend another hour explaining the complete breakdown of the recent talks in Bonn. Those were supposed to set up a survival route for humanity with a new agreement to save the climate. That was by rapidly reducing our greenhouse gas emissions. Greenpeace issued a fake edition of the International Herald Tribune with the headline, World Leaders Sign Pact to Avert Climate Disaster. So many of us dream to read those headlines. Quote, in a front-page ad in today's International Herald Tribune, the leaders of the European Union thank the European public for having engaged in months of civil disobedience leading up to the Copenhagen Climate Conference that will be held this December. It was only thanks to your massive pressure over the past 6 months that we could so dramatically shift our climate change policies. To those who were arrested, we thank you. Oh, yeah. Well, here is what really happened. Likely you've heard some solid science, including on this program, saying we need to cut human-induced greenhouse gas emissions 40% by 2020 to keep a livable planet as we know it. That's a big cut, 40% by 2020. This is what countries have proposed so far, according to Phil England, the host of Climate Radio in the UK. Australia, well, it's not clear. A conditional target of 25%, but they're starting from a base year of the year 2000, not 1990 as they should. Canada is proposing a massive 2.7% cut. Ooh, boo for Canada and the tar sands. The EU is proposing 20 to 30%, half of which would be in offsets. That means, you know, some forest in some other part of the world, which could easily not work out or be faked. Norway is proposing 30%, a third of which could be offsets. Japan, just 8%, but no offsets. New Zealand is saying, well, we'll tell you later. Russia, yeah, later again. And the United States, a massive 0 to maybe 4%. The exact number is unclear because it's mainly in offsets and no real cuts. The IPCC's 2007 assessment, now considered to be based on old science, is that industrialized countries should be making cuts of 40% at the very least. So says Phil England. And to keep up with the international climate negotiations, you must listen to Climate Radio with host Phil England. Go to climateradio.org for all his programs. So, we can forgive the public for fearing the worst, for feeling like we should give up. Let's visit that pit of despair with the granddaddy of give-up, Sir James Lovelock.
Now, the Earth's been in, it has two comfortable states, or perhaps three. One that the geologists call the ice houses, the glaciations, long states of lots of glaciers and cold. And the other state is what they call the hot houses, about 6 degrees warmer than now, that sort of thing. And
now, 6 degrees doesn't sound a lot, but it's disastrous.
It's Celsius, of course, not Fahrenheit, right. But it's an average for the world. Right. And that means it can be very hot in given places, much hotter than that.
So there's nothing we can do to reverse what's happened so far?
I wouldn't say absolutely nothing. If everybody could get together around the world, which would require a great deal of political action, and get farmers everywhere to convert their wastes to char, that's charcoal, and either bury it in the soil or drop it in the sea, that might make quite a difference. But we're awful slow to act. Consider Kyoto was 12 years ago, and not a lot has been done about global heating since then.
No, indeed it hasn't. And so, I mean, there's no action to reverse what's happened now. Is there any action to stop its ongoing destructiveness?
Well, my view is our duty is to survive. You see, it's not going to be totally fatal. There'll be quite a lot of us survive. And our descendants have got to inherit a worthwhile place. Like these islands, for example, are going to be horribly overcrowded. So are lots of other places in the world. We don't want it to turn into some sort of shackville. We want it to them to have sort of decent cities with proper infrastructures. And that's enough of a job to keep us busy. I don't think we should be wasting time and energy trying to stop it with rather useless means. They talk of a tipping point, that we go so far and then there's catastrophe. But it implies that you can go back if you don't reach the tipping point. I don't think we can.
That was Sir James Lovelock with interviewer David Frost on April 10th, 2009. Our next clip comes from a program called The Hour on CBC in Canada with host George Strombolopoulos.
Is it certain parts of the globe that are going to be harder hit than others?
Very much so, and Canada is unusually favoured. This is the sort of place, when it happened before, 55 million years ago, life not only survived, but things moved here to get away from the heat. Mm-hmm. And that's likely to happen again. But this time it'll be people moving. And I think the main problem for Canada will be how to handle the influx of people from outside the world and when to be able to say, no, we've got enough now. If we take any more, we can't feed you. The best way to look at it is, I think of yourself as somebody walking in a forest somewhere, and you pick up a gun, and you accidentally pull the trigger and it goes off and does some damage. You didn't intend to do that. You kind of pulled the trigger by accident, and that's what we've done. We pulled a trigger on the system, and the system is now moving into another state.
So let's say, like, in centuries and centuries from now, this could have happened anyway, but we've just kick-started the process.
Exactly.
Wow. So that means, then, that we should have a really good time, shouldn't we?
Well, it won't be all bad. No. There'll be some exciting moments, I think.
For sure. Is it reversible?
No, it isn't. That's the crux of it. I think a lot of people around the world, particularly politicians, the people who had the Kyoto meeting, the Bali meeting, they think that if we're good and we stop burning fuels and everything, it'll all go back to where it was. It won't.
Can we slow
Once it started moving, you can't stop it.
Can we slow it down?
I wouldn't say we can't, but I don't think we can. Renewables are a joke. I mean, they will not supply anywhere near enough energy at all. But they're very, very good for business. You can make a lot of money going into renewable energy.
So how do you... So the environmentalists don't like you very much, do they?
No.
Is there a chance you're wrong in your mind?
Of course there is. I'm a scientist, and you can never be certain about anything. Mm-hmm.
And so how long does it take to get to the place where we can no longer... Like, are you saying that... You're not saying the entire human race will be wiped out, but you're saying
heavens,
that...
Heavens, no. No.
But a significant number. You're not talking about a party here.
I'm afraid so. As many as 7 out of 8 are likely to be wiped out, yes.
Is that bleak enough for you? The big cull, billions of humans dead as humans race towards the poles to escape killer heat, storms, and blowing sand, and agriculture falls apart. Whoa. Speaks about the environment at rockearth.com.
I've always put a lot of stock in the human being, you know, maybe more than I should. But I put a lot of stock in humans. I know some humans that are pretty doggone great and pretty doggone powerful. So being a cautious optimist, I tend to trust that the humans will somehow save us from total annihilation. But as far as the environment goes, I don't know if it's getting better or worse, you know, and at least there's an awareness that it's a bad thing to tear it up, which we didn't have, you know, not so many years ago. But I think it's got a long way to go. I think we're just going to really have to count on people. And it's a corny thing to say today, and it's an almost laughable thought, because they've just torn hell out of everything they've ever got their hands on. But I think there's something in them that could also do something really great.
Well, I won't back down. No, I won't back down. You could stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't back down. I'm gonna stand my ground. I won't be turned around. From dragging me down, gonna stand my ground, and I won't back down.
This is Radio EcoShock, and that was a bit of Tom Petty, the studio version with a little Live Aid crowd mixed in. Tom Petty is one of the many musicians participating at Rock the Earth at rocktheearth.org.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world. Radio EcoShock.
You are listening to a replay of my classic 2009 Radio EcoShock show. Enjoy yourself. It's later than you think. You can download it for free or pass on the link in my show blog at ecoshock.org. You can also find a list of song credits and sources there too. ecoshock.org. Let's get back to the show. I'm Alex Smith. We're talking about whether we can still turn this thing around. Or is the climate already gone? Should we just party hardy? Fly around the world? Drive gas guzzlers like there's no tomorrow?
Grousing about gas prices has become our new national pastime, but as it turns out, we're griping while we guzzle.
The United States